but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Really strong performance by the Oregon Ducks on Saturday. Absolutely physically imposing, dominant in the ways it needed to be dominant. The kind of win that made me feel really good about where the Oregon football program is. Simultaneously, if I put myself in the shoes of Lincoln Riley's fan base at USC, this did not look like the mecca of college football on display. Couldn't run the football, couldn't handle the physicality of Oregon, struggled in key moments to compose itself. I liked what I saw from Oregon, but if I were a USC fan, I'd have reasonable doubt about Lincoln Riley and the Trojans. Like, this is as good as it gets type doubt. Meanwhile, Oregon State meandering toward the hire of a coach. North Dakota State's Tim Pulisic, Montana State's Brent Vegan, Alabama assistant Jamarcus Shepard, maybe a little Jim Mora Jr. and a little Will Stein late into the process, but those three, I am fairly confident, are your finalists. And it looks to me like Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State, has had a wrinkle thrown into his plan. I just posted this at johncanzano.com. I am told that intermediaries between Justin Wilcox, the fired Cal coach, they fired him on Sunday, and Oregon State were talking this morning, and that Wilcox and athletic director Scott Barnes are supposed to meet and at least have conversations, if not an interview. It is an 11th hour wrinkle in a coaching hire process that was moving along nicely and looked like it was gearing and ramping up towards a resolution. Everybody else out there was talking about the possibility for Oregon State to make an announcement maybe on Sunday or Monday after they played the game in Pullman against Washington State. I think Scott Barnes was going to try to surprise everybody by finalizing this deal before Thanksgiving and then coming out with maybe a Black Friday announcement, in the anticipation and run-up to the game in Pullman, and be able to talk about the hire of their next football coach on Friday. We'll see if the Wilcox angle is viable. I've got questions about it. I'm not completely sold that this is the best path for Oregon State. I kind of like the direction they were going with this two-headed FCS coach interview process, Brett Vegan, Montana State, Tim Pulisic, North Dakota State. In fact, those two programs played for the national championship last year in the FCS division. It was a 35-32 game that was won by North Dakota State. So Pulisic got the win there. But they are now the one and the two seed again in the FCS bracket and seemingly on a collision course with each other. Vegan in town, flying into PDX, interviewing with Scott Barnes. I'm told Pulisic is a finalist as well. I think Alabama assistant Jamarcus Shepard has a little bit of an uphill climb against those other two because he is a guy that doesn't have proof of performance as a head coach. And after you've been through what Oregon State has been through with Trent Bray, flaming out after a 5-14 record, I am skeptical that Scott Barnes would hire another first-time, first-year head coach. Leads me to believe that it's probably Pulisic and Vegan, who both come from the Kurt Cignetti blueprint at Oregon State. Cignetti, people may remember, went from James Madison to Indiana, and he brought a bunch of players from his roster with him. You look at what Matt Entz has done in leaving the FCS division and going to Fresno State, very similar. Jimmy Rogers leaving that FCS division, going to Washington State. Kind of the blueprint is there. These ADs, they don't like to invent things. They like to copy things. And so I kind of think Polsek and Vegan are the top candidates, and Jamarcus Shepherd right behind them, Jim Mora Jr., Will Stein after that, if you're seeding them. I am told Paul Chryst, the former Wisconsin and Pitt coach, is not a finalist. He's not getting this job. But for me, it comes down to one of two things. Do you go with the FCS coaches at Oregon State, with knowing that your first year in the Pac-12 next season would get a little more traction, knowing that you would have, you know, some guys in that room that would bring some players with them? Or do you pause here to consider Justin Wilcox, who I am told interviewed for the job the last two times ago when it was open, and it went to Jonathan Smith? Apparently Scott Barnes talked with Justin Wilcox then and really liked him, and then got blown away by Jonathan Smith in an interview and just went, no, Jonathan's the right hire. Justin Wilcox did not get the job, obviously. Wilcox also was considered by Oregon, as I have previously reported. That one was a little weird, though, because I kind of feel like they were so worried about what, like, former players like Joey Harrington and some boosters like Pat Kilkenny were going to think if they went outside the family again, because they had gone outside the family with Willie Taggart and Mario Cristobal. If they went outside the family for a third time, they were going to risk people going, well, why didn't you hire Wilcox? And so I believe that the way that it was offered to Wilcox, and it was offered, I am told he was offered the job. Justin even stopped me at Pac-12 Media Day that next year and said, yeah, I was offered the job, but I'll tell you the backstory someday. Well, I found out the backstory. He was offered the job, but he was offered it with the stipulation that he could not bring his offensive and defensive coordinators. He couldn't pick his position coaches. It was offered to him in a way that basically said, you can take the job, but we're going to dictate everything around you. They knew he wouldn't accept that when they offered it to him. But I think it's their way of being able to pacify the crowd that wanted, you know, let's get back to our roots. Let's make a good hire, while also knowing that, you know, he's not going to take it. Dan Lanning ends up with the job. Oregon very happy with Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning very happy with Oregon. It seemingly has worked out for the Ducks. What should the Beavers do? 503-417-7575. How much consideration would you give Justin Wilcox? And I want to throw this out there, too. I am told Jaron Kiawe-Sagapuletele broke down in tears in the team meeting when Ron Rivera and Justin Wilcox informed the team that Wilcox would not be coaching the team anymore. Sagapuletele is going to be the blue chip quarterback that is out on the open market. He has already been to Oregon, and so he has seen the top tier programs, and we know what he did. He went to Oregon. He got paid about $1 million to enroll at Oregon. He turned around, got into the portal, and went back to Cal, the very first place that offered him a job, offered him a scholarship, and he went to go play for Justin Wilcox. If Sagapuletele and Wilcox are a package deal, can Oregon State be in play here? Do they have enough money in the NIL collective? Or are we all rolling our eyes going, there's no way that kid's going to do what every other kid in America does. He's going to take the money. He's going to go get $3 or $4 or $5 million from an SEC or a Big Ten school. He is gone. Because last night I had a conversation with an assistant coach at Cal who's on the staff, was on Justin Wilcox's staff. And the assistant coach at Cal told me, JKS is a different kid, not necessarily going to go where all the money is. He's going to go where he feels good and there's enough money. And I said, would Malik Murphy money be enough for JKS? Like, just throwing that out there, would he consider it? He said, I think if they hired Justin Wilcox, JKS would think about it. And if you're Oregon State, does that give you any kind of pause here as you're moving towards hiring Tim Polsek, or you're hiring Brent Vegan, or you're hiring Jamarcus Shepherd, the Alabama assistant? Do you stop and pause here? Now, I sound crazy talking about the idea of Sagapuletele going to play in the Pac-12 next year, but I kind of wonder, like, he picked the ACC and Cal over being at Oregon, didn't he? He's kind of been there, done that, seen that. Will Jaron Kiawe-Sagapuletele be part of the deal for Justin Wilcox? It's worth thinking about, and it's why I think Oregon State needs to stop right now And I think they are going to talk to Justin Wilcox. I am told that both Phil Knight and Pat Kilkenny have issued an endorsement to Oregon State for Justin Wilcox. It's another wrinkle. Do you pick up a donor or two in the process of hiring Justin Wilcox? It's why I think Oregon State has to stop and consider all of the options. I went into way more depth at johncanzano.com if you want to read it, but I want to talk about it here. 503-417-7575. Furthermore, Duck fans, do you feel good? Do you feel better about what you saw from Oregon on Saturday? I kind of do. It was the kind of win that made me think, gosh, Oregon can get out and play with anybody on a given day. The playoff is about matchups. This was about a matchup on Saturday, and Oregon matched up very favorably, in my view, with USC. Just far more physical, far more ability to make plays when it mattered and when it counted. Looked to me like if they played that game about 10 times, I think Oregon wins 8 or 9 of them. I just think Oregon is that much better than USC. I was not surprised to see the final outcome be a blowout win. I had predicted that. I felt good about it, but in the end, I kind of looked at USC and I went, man, they just cannot, they cannot use and they cannot run the football and they cannot get first downs when they need to. And at some point, that pass-happy attack ends up being put under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. 503-417-7575 is the number. Stephen Vaughn, you're in the hot seat. Let's start with Justin Wilcox. Do you stop here? How much pause do you give? How much credence do you give? What kinds of questions are you thinking about? Does Wilcox move the needle enough? Or do you just kind of move on towards the FCS guys that you were already planning probably to hire?
I would definitely stop and think about Wilcox. I think he is a good head coach. Now, think about his Cal run that he had, his tenure there at Cal. When they were favored, when they were had a lot of expectations, they never really lived up to expectations, but when they were not thought of to be very good, that's when they kind of played over their heads, and that includes this season. Like, this year, this team of Cal was not that talented. Like, going into the season, we thought, oh, man, they're a 3-4-win team. They lost every single running back in the portal in the spring. Like, they just lost a ton of players, yet they come out, they're bowl eligible. They won, what, seven games, something like that. They have one of the best freshman quarterbacks in JKS, probably the best freshman quarterback in all the nation. They got him to flip from Oregon to Cal. Like, I think that I would have to stop and think about it. And to your point, if Saga Pulitelli and Justin Wilcox is a package deal, or that is a possibility, yes, if you're Oregon State, you have to think long and hard about that, because if you can get your hands on a guy like Jaren Chiave, Saga Pulitelli as your quarterback, you do that every single time. So I think that does throw a little wrinkle in there that it seems as if Wilcox has some interest in Oregon State. I think that Wilcox can be a successful head coach, especially on the group of five level, group of six level. I think it might be a little too much to think that he could be a great coach on the power four level, but at this level, I think he might be a good head coach, like one of the better ones. So yeah, I would put Wilcox right up there with everybody else. And you have to think about it, especially if you can get a guy like JKS, because look, it's about talent now. It's about retention of talent. It's about getting the best guys in there. Saga Pulitelli could go, maybe anywhere he wants to in the offseason. If he goes to Oregon State, you have to think about that.
Do you think that's real? I mean, because, look, I've got an assistant coach at Cal who just got fired on Sunday, and he's reaching out to me, on Sunday night, and he's going, listen, if Oregon State hires Justin Wilcox, I think they got a shot at JKS. He says, the kid can go out on the open market and get $3 or $4 or $5 million. He says, but if Oregon State could get to like $2 million, he says, I think that kid would listen if he could play for Justin Wilcox. Is that a ground ball you have to run out? And how much time do you dedicate to that? Because, you're at the whim of Saga Pulitelli. You're at the whim of that kid. Do you run the ground ball out, or do you just say, man, it's 2:11th hour. We got to go with Polsek or Vegan because, we've moved along this process to this point.
For me, you run it out. You got to run out that ground ball, John. Like, he's too good of a player, and you need to talk to Wilcox about it. Because, if Wilcox has interest and there is that possibility you could bring in a five-star transfer portal guy, you talk about that. So I don't know how real it would be. Like, maybe JKS is a different type of cat, and he's just like, look, man, I just want to follow my coaches around. Like, I love Wilcox. I trust this guy. Like, I want to go where he goes. It's hard for me to believe that, honestly. Like, that just kind of just...
I know, because it flies in the face of everything we've seen, right?
Right. Literally everything we've seen, it flies in the face of it. But that's why you got to run it out. That's why you do have to explore it. I don't think that you need to necessarily make this hire right here on this spot. Like, you can let it go a couple extra days if you have to try to figure out, look, we can get one of the best quarterbacks in the nation in our school. If we can't, we'll go somewhere else. But I think that's something you have to look into.
I think Barnes is already doing that. I am told that Pat Kilkenny and Phil Knight both gave endorsements for Wilcox. And if you're Oregon State's athletic director, you're going, hey, wait a minute, does that mean I'm getting donors here too, right? Like, you know, you're not getting the Phil Knight that gives to Oregon, but are you getting a Phil Knight and a Pat Kilkenny that would, do something to support Justin Wilcox's program with some kind of financial support for Damnation Collective or whatever it's going to be called afterwards? I feel silly raising the possibility of JKS to Oregon State because of everything we've seen in college athletics, but I do wonder about a kid who's already been to Eugene and has already seen the machine, right? He's seen the machinery in Eugene. He enrolled early at Oregon. He took a seven-figure payday. He looked around. He said, I don't feel very important to the coaching staff here, and he got in the portal. And where did he go? He didn't get in the portal to go to Texas. He didn't get in the portal to go to Florida State. He didn't get in the portal and go to Ohio State or Michigan. He got in the portal and went to Cal and signed on to play for Justin Wilcox. And seemingly, not because it was about the academics, but he kept saying over and over, he was the first one to offer me a scholarship. He just felt good about Wilcox. So how good does JKS feel about him? And by the way, if there are schools out there with vacancies, how many of them would put Wilcox at the top of the list if they knew they're getting JKS in the wash? That's the thing.
I think schools would consider it for a D coordinator job for sure. Like, that's how good I think Saka Pulatelli is. And you might be right. Maybe he is just different. He wants to be around Justin Wilcox, but you need to explore that. And I do wonder, like, think about when the Beavers signed Malik Murphy out of the portal and how excited Beaver fans were, how excited we all were thinking about, man, this Oregon State team, you know, if they reach their potential, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is a different level of portal guys, so you do have to expect that. And I look at, I go back to this Cal team this year, John. They weren't very talented. You put that roster with Oregon State, like, I still don't know that they're that much more talented than Oregon State was going into the season, but you look at how Wilcox coached them up, and they're winning six games, you know, they're winning ACC games at Louisville. If you're in the new Pac-12, I mean, what is it? Is it 8-9 win team? Like, I think that Wilcox can bring in guys, like, from the portal anyways. And so then if you add on a quarterback on top of it, like, I don't see how you can't run this ground ball out with Justin Wilcox at this point in the process.
I think you have to. You have to take today. And I was told that Barnes was, contacted this morning. Wilcox's camp or the intermediaries on Wilcox's side were talking to Oregon State. There was talk going back and forth. Certainly worth exploring that. If I can segue into Oregon in a parallel universe, Oregon, meanwhile, is coming off this great win over USC. They've got Washington this week. Oh, by the way, Softy coming on the show today at 4 o'clock. Dave Softy Mahler from KJR in Seattle. You're going to hear my conversation with Softy, in which I proposed to him that it might be possible that Washington doesn't beat Oregon for about another decade. We'll see. We'll hear from Softy coming up. Can Damon Williams Jr. and Jed Fish and the Huskies ruin Oregon's season? That's what it comes down to. I feel really good, Stephen, about the Ducks' win over USC. How about you?
Yeah, I think for me it was more of a thing about USC. Like, they are so far behind Oregon in this race to be relevant, and I thought they'd maybe be a little bit closer, and they were not. And so for me, like, look, I know Oregon's talented. I know Oregon can play against a lot of these teams, and they can play a different type of style. But Oregon has perfected the Pac. Like, that felt like a Pac-12 game, John. And Oregon has perfected that Pac-12 style of game. USC is not nowhere close to Oregon. I think that's the alarming thing. Is like, look, man, this was a team that, you know, had two losses. Had they won this game, they'd be considered maybe for a CFP berth. They're not close. And I think that's the alarm part, man. Like, this Oregon has moved on and moved past these Pac-12 teams. They're a real Big Ten team, while everyone else is still chasing it and still trying to be, you know, a real Big Ten team. So I was more more disappointed is the wrong word, but just more shocked by how bad USC performed in this game.
They just didn't have the physicality to put so much pressure on them to get pass happy.
Well, and defensively, they stood no chance. Like, it just seemed like Oregon could score whenever they wanted to. Like, it just was like, look, if USC is going to win this game, it's going to be because Oregon messes up and makes tons of mistakes.
Yeah, I could feel that in Lincoln Riley. Remember late in this game, you know, USC scored to pull within one score, and Lincoln Riley should have kicked the PAT, right? What, he went for two. And I thought to myself, like, what is he doing? And it was obvious to me that he was basically saying, we can't stop them. We're not going to do well in a potential tie game situation in overtime. I might as well go for two here and try to get an edge, try to get a, you know, within six instead of seven. And so we're not tying the game. We're taking a lead if we score another touchdown, because I think he was admitting we can't stop them, and we got to find a way, some weird way. I got to do something gimmicky to try to steal a point or steal a possession. I was surprised he didn't onside kick the ensuing possession, because he was basically saying, oh, we can't stop Oregon. We got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about Tim Polchek, who is the coach at North Dakota State. We'll talk Brett Vegan as well. We're going to go to North Dakota State next, where the sports columnist there is going to tell us how much hand-wringing is going on in FCS country. We'll get Dave Softy Mahler at 4 o'clock. I want you here for it. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Between the Ducks, the Beavers, college football, the NFL, we got a Thanksgiving week. We'll get a visit from Dave Softy Mahler at 4 o'clock. We're going to talk to Mike McFeely, the columnist in North Dakota, coming up as well. I want to take a phone call here. Roy in Portland. Roy, you're going to start us off. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, John?
I'm doing well.
Man, if you can get Justin Wilcox, that's a no-brainer. I don't even know what the discussion is about. I mean, if he wants to come to Oregon State, I'm hiring this guy tomorrow morning. I mean, Montana State coach, I wouldn't want, if I'm Oregon State, yeah, if you want to be small time, go get the Montana State coach. Because all I hear from Oregon State fans is, oh, we don't want to be small time. We want to, well, go hire the Montana State coach then if you want to be small time. Wilcox is a proven head coach. He's a good head coach. He's recruited there. You're going to need California recruits if you're Oregon State. You're going to need somebody that knows how to recruit. They're recruited in the Pac-12. They're recruiting nationwide. So if you don't want to be a big-time program, you know, keep doing the same things. If you got Phil Knight endorsing Wilcox, to me, what are you waiting on?
Right.
You got Cal is a dumpster fire. How much NIL did Cal give Wilcox?
True.
What investments is Cal making in their football program? So you can't blame him for the record. I mean, what is Cal doing? They stuck the man in the ACC when he got to fly all the way across the country to play games. And then they complain that they're not winning and getting the results. Well, what do you expect? You have no money. You have no NIL. You're not invested in your program, and you are a West Coast team in the ACC. That's a disaster. That's a setup for failure right there. So I would go get Wilcox. He's from Oregon. He knows how to recruit. You bring in your hometown son back. He knows the area. He knows California. He knows Arizona, Washington, and recruiting is with the players you're going to need at Oregon State. And you know, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what's there to think about, because I'm like, does Wilcox want to take the job? You know what I mean? Because he could easily get a high dollar defensive coordinator job in the SEC or ACC or Big Ten.
Yeah. What does he value? Right. What's important to him? Does he want his own ship? Does he want a pirate ship in the Pac-12, or does he want to go join, you know, Sark and be the coordinator at Texas? Like, you know, I don't know, Roy. We're going to find out. We're about to find out, I guess. Here's the other thing. You know, Cal's at the bottom of the ACC, or the bottom half of the ACC. Oregon State's a top half of the Pac-12 school. You're trading power four for group of six. Is that a factor? There's a lot to consider here. Is there a financial commitment that's coming with Wilcox from Phil Knight, Pat Kilkenny, that makes this a no-brainer? We're going to visit with Mike McFeely, who's a columnist in North Dakota. They are upset and wringing their hands over the possibility of losing another head coach. They lost their coach to Fresno State a couple of years ago. Now they've got a second coach with Tim Pulsak, who apparently is considering this Oregon State thing or being considered at Oregon State. We'll see. Let's go to Ace, who's on the Canby Ferry. I love this. Ace, welcome to the show.
Hey there, John. Thanks for taking my call. I've got some thoughts on the Oregon State coaching search, but I'd like to first ask if maybe you could see if you can get Softy to move down to your station in the transfer portal.
You like that?
So I love his passion. He's a huge Husky homer, but
yeah.
But I do love his passion. One thing that I would suggest, if Scott, Mr. Barnes is listening, is taking out the factor of what a coach might bring in terms of players. Focus on their ability to assess talent and fit in game day coaching. Because like with Trent Bray, part of the decision factor was keeping players. And we saw how that worked out. The players come and go. You want to focus on the right coach as opposed to who they're going to bring
right.
for a quick fix. I think that is really important.
Yeah, I think you have to think in those terms. But it's hard, right? When you're going, you're Oregon State, you wanted to stay visible and matter. You hired Trent Bray. You promoted him with the idea being continuity. And then, he basically lays an egg, and there is no there's no way around it. It didn't work out. And now you're starting all the way over in a brand new conference. There's a whole bunch of uncertainty. And it would be awfully tempting to go, hey, you know what? The FCS coaches, they bring 15 or 17 players with them. Look at what Cignetti did from James Madison to Indiana. Look at what Matt Entz did in leaving to come to Fresno State. Look at what Jimmy Rogers did in going to Washington State. It makes you passable, doesn't it? Like, it kind of does. It makes you passable because you don't have to use the portal in the same way. The coach goes, I'm the Pied Piper. 15 or 17 of these players are coming with me. Cam is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Cam, welcome.
Hey, John. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did.
The Oregon State thing's interesting. I've been watching it. They really can't turn away from Wilcox if he wants to talk to him. They got to at least talk to him and see, how they feel about it and give him a chance. But really kind of interested in this Will Stein thing, this speculation that he might be a finalist. I was kind of critical of him earlier in the season, but he's really kind of settled down and seems to have gotten some really good play calling going at Oregon. My question would be, if Will Stein does go, who would be – hold on, John. We're getting some breaking news here. It appears that Chip Kelly was just released by the Raiders. Hey, you don't think, do you?
No. Get Chip Kelly out of your head. Chip Kelly didn't want to coach college when he left UCLA. He's not going to – nobody's going to hire him to be a head coach in college. I think they'll hire him to be a play caller, particularly if you've got better players. – But if you're Oregon and Will Stein leaves and Chip Kelly wants to come be the play caller, it would be awfully tempting to dream about that. But I just don't see Chip Kelly doing it. And I think it's hard to go home. It's hard to recreate what you had. And in my conversations with Chip, I kind of felt like, when the job opened the last time when Dan Lanning got it, if Chip Kelly wanted to do that again, I think he would have done it at that time. If he wanted to be in Eugene at all. And I think it would be really hard for him to be in Eugene as the offensive coordinator. He also is the highest paid offensive coordinator in the NFL at $6 million a year. And he's walking away with a whole bunch of money. Chip Kelly has been fired so many times. I mean, he can't afford to be employed. Think about all the money he's got from the 49ers and the Eagles and now the Raiders in being fired. If you could have it so lucky, Stephen, to get fired by these NFL teams. All right, we're going to go to Mike McFeely, the columnist at the Forum in Fargo, Moorhead. He's joining us now. We got to talk about North Dakota State's coach. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Lay it out for us. How much hand-wringing is going on as the coach Tim Pulsak is reported to be a finalist at Oregon State.
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit going on, at least among the fan base. Tim Pulsak is a very popular guy in Fargo. He's been here. This is his third stint at North Dakota State, and he is a guy who came in after Matt Entz, who fans in Oregon might know, who's now the head coach at Fresno State. But Matt Entz came in, did well, but didn't really like the public side of it, didn't like the media side of it, didn't like the booster side of it necessarily. And there was a bit of a little stagnation maybe going on with the Bison football program. And Tim Pulsak is a guy that rode in a couple of years ago and absolutely re-energized the program and re-engaged the fan base and re-engaged the booster class and the donor class, and is everywhere all at once somehow. he is a walking human tornado. And so aside from the fact that they've just about won every game he's coached at North Dakota State, he's a very popular, charismatic, energetic kind of guy that I think people would really hate to see go this quickly. I think there's always been a belief at NDSU that if the head football coach is successful, that they're going to go on to another job for more money and the chance to get a bigger job and more money and more prestige and a bigger challenge. But I think losing Tim Pulsak after 2 years would have the Bison fan base in a fairly deep depression.
Give us an idea. You know, there's always the risk when you see more than one coach leave that, you know, this guy was just living off the rosters of his predecessor. He's 25-2 in two seasons, national championship in his first season, number one seed in the FCS bracket. Are these his guys?
No, actually, most of them are Matt Entz's guys, but there are a few that are coming up now, redshirt freshmen and some true sophomores that Tim Pulsak did recruit. And the kids he's getting, and this has been true of North Dakota State for a long time, actually, John, is that a lot of the top kids they get are kids that have been offered by MAC schools or, in some cases, even AAC schools or American schools, in a few cases, Mountain West schools. And so North Dakota State, fans in Oregon should know, Beaver fans should know that it has the FCS label, but this isn't Portland State or Eastern Washington. This is a program that has a $55 million indoor practice facility. It has access to any private jets it wants in Fargo, Moorhead to take on recruiting trips or booster trips. They've been operating as a high G5 probably since about 2013 or so. Budget maybe doesn't say so, but the success and the way they act certainly says so. They get kids that most FCS programs don't normally have access to. And so Pulsak has been hitting the trails. He's flipped a couple kids the last couple of years from places like Syracuse, Northern Illinois, places like that, which may not sound impressive, but again, it is an FCS program in Fargo. So I think the belief is that if Tim stays here for a couple more years, that the roster will probably even be better than it is right now. Matt Entz was a great recruiter himself, but there was some holes in the roster that Tim Pulsak is working through. It's some position groups, but the belief is that as things go along here, he's going to improve the roster even more.
Mike McFeely is our guest sports columnist there in North Dakota, covering North Dakota State, among other things. Mike, you know, the idea that, you know, that Pulsak has done everything he could possibly do at NDSU, is that perhaps a reason for him to be looking around national championship in year one, or how do you see his sort of lifespan there as the coach?
Well, I think Tim hasn't told me this directly, but I think it's fairly obvious that his eventual goal in his coaching life is to coach a Big Ten program. He's a Wisconsin guy, comes from very blue-collar roots, but he's a Wisconsin guy, played Division III football in Wisconsin. He was an assistant under Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. And I think that would really be, you know, the dream job for him would be to be the head coach at Wisconsin or Iowa. And so North Dakota State's a great place to be. And I, you know, I truly believe he's happy to be here. He didn't take the head job here to just move on in a couple of years. But, you know, I think that he has to get somewhere else before you go to a Wisconsin or in Iowa. I don't think it's realistic to expect one of those schools to hire Tim Pawlcek directly from North Dakota State. And so whether it's Oregon State, whether it's Colorado State, whether it's some other state somewhere else, that's a group of six school or something like that. I think that's Tim Pawlcek's thinking in what he wants to do in his career. He's still a young guy. He's 46 years old. So there's some time for him to realize those goals, but I don't know that he can get from here to where he wants to go eventually in one shot.
Now, you look at NDSU, that is a program that's got resources, it's got players. I think if you put that team in the Pac-12, I think it might be competitive. I think it would beat a lot of Mountain West teams and year in and year out. I mean, I just think you've got it rolling there if you're Pawlcek. Does he have to be careful here? Because, you know, he's not going to have those advantages over everybody else in his division if he goes to Oregon State. I mean, this is going to be, hey, a lot of things are equal. Go get Boise State.
Right. I'll say this, and you're right, and that's something that Tim has to weigh is, and this has been the case for about, 15 years now, is North Dakota State, if you look at the latest Sagarin ratings, they're ranked 29th in Division I football. Not FCS. In all of Division I football, Sagarin has them at number 29. They would not just, you know, compete in the Mountain West. I think they'd have a pretty dang good shot this year of winning the Mountain West with what they have on the field. And in the new Pac-12, I think they would do just fine as well. It would be a challenge. It would be different. You know, you wouldn't have the cupcakes that you have in FCS, but they would do just fine. But certainly Tim has to weigh, is Oregon State a better job than North Dakota State? Or could he wait for something better in a year or 2 years, and then that would give him a better shot to get to where he wants to be? You know more about Oregon State than I do, but from the outside, it looks like there are maybe some questions there about budgets and leadership and a couple mm-hmm. different things going on and whether they can win. I mean, you know, there's a reason why the job is open right now. It's because the previous guy was 0-7 to start the year. So there's clearly something amiss at Oregon State. And so, I mean, is this the job that he wants to leave North Dakota State for? I would think he's going to think long and hard about that, even if the job is offered to him. If he interviews for it, I don't know that we've really confirmed that he's going to do that either. But that's certainly something to think about. Matt Entz used a great phrase with me a couple of years ago when I was talking with him. He said, you know, one of the great advantages at North Dakota State is that you have access to winning. You have access to winning because everything is in place to win. I mean, it's funded terrifically. There's a tradition here that goes back 60 years of winning national championships that has a terrific fan base. It has deep-pocketed boosters that most FCS programs just don't have. Maybe Montana State. Other than that, I don't know that any other FCS programs have the access to money that NDSU has either. And so it's a pretty good job. And so I don't know that he needs to take the first job that's offered to him. I don't know that he needs to take the second job. I think he can maybe play this out for a while. He's not going to lose at NDSU. The team that's coming back next year might be better than the team is this year. With what he's got coming back. And so he can make some decisions, I think, that benefit his long-term future.
There'd be a tizzy going on if this were the coach at Mississippi, and, you know, we see what Lane Kiffin is doing. But you're around Pawlcek. Did you ask him about Oregon State?
I did. After you reported over the weekend that he was a candidate for the job, I waited till after Pawlcek's post-game press conference Saturday when NDSU had a game at the Fargo Dome. I didn't want to ask in a public setting and let everybody else have in on the fun.
Yep.
And so I took him aside afterward. You know the way that works, John.
Yep. You're 100%.
100%. And so I took him aside and asked him, I said, there's a report from John Canzano out in Oregon that you're a candidate for the Oregon State job. Anything to it? What can you tell me? Is it true? Are you a candidate? And Tim just gave the basic, my agent is talking to a lot of people. As long as we keep winning, there's going to be certain opportunities that arise. But for right now, I'm focused on coaching the Bison, and I'll leave it at that. And that's really the only comment I'll have on this. And so he didn't deny it. He didn't say no, but he also didn't really want to talk very much about any job possibilities. I just don't, you know, Craig Bohl left here in 2013 to go to Wyoming. that was kind of a shock to people because it was really the first time that that the folks around here, including myself, had been through something like that. Chris Kleiman then left 5 years later to go to Kansas State. 5 years later, Matt Entz left to go to USC to be an assistant coach. And so I think that people now are sort of, I don't think that anybody's going to burn the town down because Tim Palsek is playing footsie with other schools. I think that people understand this is not a, 15-year job. This is a 5-year job, or in this case, maybe a 2 or 3 year job. And I think that they would look at Palsek and say, thanks for the memories. Wish you would have stayed longer, but we understand that you're going to make $1.5 million or whatever the number is going to be at the next job. And hopefully we see you someday at Wisconsin or Iowa.
Yeah, you look at the success that Kurt Cignetti had. Is there a concern if Palsek takes the job that, you know, 12 or 15 players are getting in the portal and going with him?
Oh, that's always a concern. I mean, there's an example right here in the Dakotas. Jimmy Rogers, who's coaching now at Washington State, left South Dakota State last year to go to Washington State. And he took about, I think it was 12 or 13 players with him. And they were all good ones. And he also took some recruits that had not even yet set foot on South Dakota State's campus. I think there's 5 or 6 recruits he took as well. And so that's always a concern. I mean, Cignetti did the same thing when he went from James Madison to Indiana. He took a bunch of kids with him and had success, by the way, as well. And so that, I think that's playing into this too, is that Kurt Cignetti has proven you can go from a James Madison was an old playoff rival in FCS of North Dakota State. So you can go from a really high-level FCS or low-level FBS program and go to the Big Ten and win some games with some of those players. So that's certainly a concern. And South Dakota State this year is nothing like it was the last couple of years before that Jimmy Rogers took some of those players. And so North Dakota State has weathered some storms. They've lost some really good players through the portal. But, boy, you take 15 good players off a roster, and it's really hard to replace that in 1 year.
Mike McFeely with us, coming at us from North Dakota, where he writes a sports column there and hosts a podcast as well. Mike, you had a chance to see Brett Vegan and Montana State against North Dakota State last year in the FCS national championship game. What were those two guys like? Because you saw them in a media setting and were around them just a little bit that week.
Yeah, I mean, and I've known Brett Vegan for 30 years. Or more. He actually went to high school in North Dakota, played for North Dakota State, coached at NDSU for a long, long time before he left and went to Wyoming with Craig Bohl back in 2013. And every time I see Veegs, we have a nice chat, and he's a North Dakota guy, so we act like we're old friends. But they're different personalities for sure. Brent Vegan has done a great job at Montana State. He has taken that program to a level that it wasn't able to attain before he got there. So let's make that clear. He's a heck of a football coach, but the personalities probably could not be more different, John. Brent Vegan is a stoic Scandinavian German from North Dakota, and not a lot of fire there. And that's actually one of the criticisms I've heard of Veegs since he's been in Bozeman, is that there's just not enough fire on the sidelines and fire in meetings. And Tim Palsek is what you see is what you get, man. I mean, he is fired up. He comes into press conferences, and if you ask a question that gets him fired up, and I don't mean in a negative way. I mean, if you get him fired up positively, he'll pound his fist on the lectern, and he'll start having his volume rise and the pitch of his voice go higher. And by the time he gets done answering the question, you're ready to run through a brick wall after the guy answered the question about his offensive line. Vegan's not that guy. Vegan is very stoic, very laid back, very measured. And so it's certainly a contrast in styles, and that would be, I'll say this, and I love Brent Vegan. He's a great guy, and he'd be a great coach for Oregon State. But if you're a committee or if you're a university president and you have each of those two guys in a room, I think the personality battle or the fired up battle is going to be won by the guy who's at North Dakota State right now, not the guy who's at Montana State. I think that he would win that interview just out of personality.
Mike McFeely, you're the best. That is fantastic stuff. I will check in with you down the road. Thank you, man.
Thank you, John.
All right. Really good stuff as he talks about the difference between Brent Vegan and Tim Palsek, who are, I believe, both finalists for this job at Oregon State, along with Jamarcus Shepherd. Our big splash coming up. Softy at 4 o'clock. Leave it here.
It's time.
bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Tomorrow's show, Bruce Barnum, unfiltered. Be here for it. Steven, we're going to get Barnum on tomorrow.
I'm going to work out my fingers now on the dumb button.
3 o'clock hour, I think, tomorrow. Or no, 4 o'clock tomorrow. 4 o'clock tomorrow. It'll be Bruce Barnum joining us. His athletic director at Portland State, Matt Billings, met the team playing on Saturday night at PDX. Not to welcome the players home, but to inform Barnum he was fired. I thought it was a Bush League move by the AD. Not surprised, but I think you let Barnum get settled in. Guy's given his heart and his soul 11 seasons at Portland State. And if you're going to fire him, you let him get home. You let him get home to his house. You call him and say, hey, I need to see you tomorrow. And then you go talk to him. You don't go to the airport on the tarmac like it's Lane Kiffin. Kind of Bush League. You agree with that, Steven?
Yeah, it seems like it's just for show. Like, it seems like he like, man, look at me. I'm going to make this big move. I care about football. This is what we care about. And, it comes across as you don't get it. And especially at a program like Portland State, like, he's been there forever. Does he deserve to be fired? Sure, but not like that.
Yeah, and I think if you look at his record, you go, okay, maybe it's time for someone else, some new ideas, whatever, if that's what you're doing. But again, I'd like to bring the AD on and talk to him about it, but the guy is skittish. He's running, doesn't want to come on the show, doesn't want to answer questions, doesn't want to fundraise, doesn't want to be public, but shows up at the airport, fires his coach, and then lets somebody else make the announcement. 4 o'clock hour's coming up. Softy is next. Hey, John Canzano here for Gresham Ford. I drive a Ford vehicle. My sister drives a Ford vehicle. Her friend drives a Ford vehicle. Guess where we got them? Gresham Ford. Bess Wills and her son Preston do a great job making their car dealership different than those other places. You know the other places. They'll do anything for a deal. They'll chase you around the car lot. They'll pressure you. They try to sell you a car you don't want at a price you really don't like. At Gresham Ford, it's really different. It's a family atmosphere there. So much so that one of Bess Wills' employees even got married on the Gresham Ford car lot. Can the other guys say that? Doubt it. Go to GreshamFord.com if you want to see their inventory, or get yourself out to the car lot, Powell Boulevard in Gresham. Walk on to the car lot. You're going to understand that Gresham Ford is really different than those other places. Gresham Ford's got a motto. They're the dealer with a heart. See it for yourself.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Every year, it is a treat to bring on our next guest. Dave Softy Malher from KJR in Seattle is joining us. It's Huskies, it's Ducks, it's Saturday. We got a Thanksgiving holiday. How are you feeling about your Huskies this week?
I'm feeling okay. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited. I look forward to you calling me every single year, and I'm lying.
I love it. You've been a little bit, I think, not as fired up in the last couple years. Like, last year was kind of a foregone conclusion that Oregon was going to win the game. Are you feeling that way the way this year? I mean, the spread's like a touchdown. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, if you're telling me that I'm wrong, that I got to move into your basement and serve you breakfast every day for the next 5 years, I'm taking Oregon to win the game, right? But, I mean, look, this thing was blown to smithereens, you know, a year and a half ago when Kalen DeBoer took off to go to Alabama. I think all of Husky Nation, if you will, kind of knew what was coming for UW. There was going to be a massive rebuild at Washington under Jed Fish. Only question is, how long was that going to last? And it's still ongoing. I do think he's made a tremendous amount of progress from where they were. I do think there's a lot of Husky fans and college football fans in general that don't bother to look at context when they look at the job that Jed Fish is doing at UW. They see an 8-3 football team that had, let's face it, back then, a fairly bad loss to Wisconsin doesn't look as bad after they beat Illinois last weekend, but it was bad at the time. And if you want to just look at everything in a vacuum, I guess you would say that. But where this program was a year and a half ago when Kalen took off for Alabama and what Jed Fish had in front of him was a monumental, in some ways, rebuild to even get these guys back to being bowl eligible. I mean, Jimmy Lake went 4-8, for God's sakes, in his final year at UW. And Jed Fish didn't touch that when he was at Washington in year one, and he won't touch that at Washington in year two. So I think the context of what this guy's been through and what he inherited and the job he's done has actually, in a lot of ways, been pretty impressive. And the timeline might have been sped up a little bit faster than even some Husky fans thought it would have been.
Kalen DeBoer's departure, I've wondered about this, you know, that movie Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, if DeBoer stays, if he stays at Washington, where is Washington right now? And you know, I kept thinking, could he have had a run there that just would have been right. Don James Part 2?
That's what I thought, and maybe I was naive to think that. You know, I think we live in a day and age where those types of runs probably are not going to happen, and if they do happen, they're going to be very unique. Man, and I thought Kalen DeBoer had a chance to be that guy. I mean, if he had stayed at Washington, like, we can talk about the names of guys that took off. You know, Austin Mack, who's a backup quarterback at Alabama, probably would be the starting quarterback right now at UW. All those offensive linemen, including two guys that went to play for Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, and one guy who's starting at center for DeBoer at Alabama would still be here. Jeremy Bernard as a wide receiver would still be here. You know, some secondary players that took off to go play in the SEC and in the ACC for Miami and Florida would still be here. A few players that took off to go play for Bill Belichick at North Carolina after 1 year under Jed Fish would still be here. I mean, I can be here all day talking about what it would have meant to UW if Kalen DeBoer had stayed at Washington. You know, he really had something going. He had a great coaching staff, eventually would have lost some of those guys to head jobs and coordinator jobs in the NFL. But, you know, look, I mean, the guy went, you know, obviously 25-3 when he was at UW. He went 14-1 his last year. He wasn't going to go 14-1 every year. He wasn't going to go 11-2 every year, but could 9-3, 10-2 have been the bottom for him consistently as the head coach at Washington? I think it could have been. Instead, the whole thing got blown to smithereens and Jed Fish had to come over and inherit a brand new culture and a brand new roster. And here he is now on the verge of, if they can upset Oregon, winning 9 games, which would be huge for him.
Softy, I was at that Michigan-Washington National Championship game. You were walking around that stadium hours before the game. You were on cloud 9, your team that you grew up with, playing for a national championship. And then Oregon, a year later, gets boat raced in the Rose Bowl. You were also on cloud 9 for that game. Take me through the difference between the kind of the thrill of victory with your team and then maybe a little bit of the thrill of defeat with your rival.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, you know what? I know that Oregon fans know what this feels like, to wake up and know that that night your team is going to play for the national title. You know, there's very few fan bases that know what that feels like to go to a stadium like that. Very few people that know what it's like to be on the sideline for a game like that before the game and the anticipation and look around and see all these great Husky players or whatever school you're a fan of. Every player comes out of the woodwork. Every alumni member wants to be a part of it. And I'll never, ever forget what those couple hours were like before that game with Michigan. That's number one. Number two, as far as the sports hate, and I'll steal a line from Greg Lewis. I don't even know if it's sports hate as much as it is just hate, right? I mean, I can't stand Oregon. I can't stand their fans. I can't stand the colors that they wear. And I don't even know what the hell their colors are anymore, to be totally honest with you. So I just don't like colors. I live in black and white now because Oregon's ruined everything. I'm being half sarcastic, by the way, but that stadium, the voice of their PA guy, everything, you know? So when your rival gets clowned the way Oregon got clowned in that Rose Bowl, especially in that first half, I think all of us as fans, no matter if you hate UW or love UW or hate Oregon or love Oregon or Oregon State or whatever, I think you're kind of in a mindset of, hey, if I can't do it, then neither can those sons of bitches down there, right? And misery loves company. And we were a little miserable after a 6-7 year getting boat raced by Oregon in the final game of the regular season, put up a great fight against Louisville. There was a lot of anticipation that day for Damon Williams and the way he played. And then watching Oregon get cracked in the face the way they did against the Ducks was a little bit of a cherry on top of a decent ending, I thought, for Jetfish in year number one. So as much as it was fun to watch that, it's going to be even just as painful, I think, if Oregon ever does win the national championship, which someday I expect them to do that, maybe even very soon.
Softy, it's three out of four for Washington. But Oregon wins last year's game, and there was a feeling around it with Duck fans that, hey, this is going to be another run. DeBoer's leaving. Dan right. Lanning's got momentum. Could it be 12 in a row? Could it be 15 in a row for Oregon? When I say that, does your blood start to boil?
No, because I just don't think that'll ever happen again. I think that's ridiculous what Washington allowed to have happen against Oregon. And a lot of that was incompetence on UW's part that led to them getting to that point. You know, I mean, again, like we said in your podcast the other day, you hire the wrong people and things like that can happen. You know, you don't hire people that have passion for the program. You don't have people that obviously understand the history and what the alums and the fans find important, then things like that will eventually happen. So, you know, these guys have been playing football for over 100 years together, right? Oregon and UW. And that run that you're talking about that began, obviously, in the 90s had never happened before, and I don't think ever will happen again. And I've told you many times on your show, and I still believe it, that I think you go back to, you know, Kenny Wheaton in the mid-90s, and you go back to that Rose Bowl against Kajana Carter and Phil Knight's involvement. I think if you were to ask any Oregon fan, what is your favorite thing about what has happened in the last 30 years to Oregon football, and they would say the way we smacked around Washington, the way we treated Washington, right? The way we got under their skin, the way that we controlled them, the way that we dominated them. I think Oregon fans are lying to you if they say anything else besides that. That is the number one thing on their list of accomplishments in the last 30 years is what they did during that run to UW. And maybe even in some ways what they're doing now, you know, with the money they've got to offer, with the branding they've got to offer. I think Oregon fans feel like they can wake up and they can feel superior to UW. And that was never the case until the mid-90s. And I think Oregon fans have a reason to feel that way now. And I think that Oregon fans will find that to be the most satisfying thing that they've seen handed to them on a platter in the last three decades.
The Wisconsin loss, in some weird way, silver lining to it is maybe it makes Jetfish not look as attractive to a Florida or something like that. Is there the same silver lining if Oregon punks Washington on Saturday, or is that something you can live with?
No, I mean, I can't live with it ever, number one. And number two, the silver lining of Jetfish not being as attractive and a candidate because they lost to Wisconsin. I mean, look, John, I'll just put it this way. I like Jed. I think Jed's done a really good job. I think Jed works his ass off. I'm not expecting Jetfish to stay here long term at all. So if he leaves, he leaves, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and panic if Jetfish walks out of here and takes the Florida job or an NFL job or Penn State or whatever programs out there. I'm with you that I don't think he's nearly as attractive a candidate now as he was maybe a month ago. You know, if he had beaten Wisconsin and they're in the top 15 right now and staring a potential CFP berth right in the face, I think his name is getting floated out there even more than it is today, you know, but I'm not going to lose sleep if Jetfish leaves. I'm not going to get all worked up if Jetfish takes off, because I think there's a lot of candidates out there that would be really good fits for this job if and when that happens. The DeBoer thing was a once in a lifetime thing with that guy. I mean, he wasn't just a great coach. He was also an incredible dude, just a great, great guy. Like, there's three dudes that I've covered in my career that I would put on the pedestal with each other as far as great men. I know that sounds corny, but Lorenzo Romar, Mike Holmgren, and Kalen DeBoer are all at the top. And, you know, Chris Peterson's right behind them. So that was kind of a personal deal for me, to be honest with you. When Kalen took off, it was a little, there was a little bit of heartbreak, you know, as corny as that sounds, to see a guy like that take off and take a job somewhere else. But I don't have anywhere near that potential feeling, I think, of Jed Fish leaves. He'll work hard while he's here, but I'm fully expecting him to not be here eventually.
Dennis Erickson, one of the first columns I wrote after I got to the state of the Oregon was, Dennis Erickson, it's time for him to leave Oregon State. And I was basically saying, look at his resume, right? He's the guy who leaves. He called me down to Corvallis. He yelled at me. He said, you know, you're killing me with recruiting. This isn't true. 2 days later, he took the Niners job. He left for the NFL.
Right.
Is this just what coaches are now?
Yes. Yes. They're all full of crap. Every single one of them. And you know what? Honestly, I think it's just the way to go. You know, you're with us until you're not. You know, Pete Carroll was the same way, by the way, John, when he was at the Seahawks, when it came to players. You know, he would sit there in front of the media. He'd tell you how much he loved the guy, how much he supported the guy. He probably said the same thing to him behind the scenes in the locker room. And then the next day he would cut him, right, and move on and go to somebody else. And I just think that's the, like ADs, you know, ADs will have your back. Athletic directors will have your back until the minute that they don't. And they should, because as long as you're the head coach, as long as you're drawing a paycheck from that university, you should come across as a guy that's totally devoted to that program and that fan base and that administration. It's why I kind of find what's happening with Lane Kiffin right now to be so terrible for Ole Miss fans. I mean, Ole Miss fans should be sitting here right now, John, having the time of their lives, for God's sakes, right? Getting ready for the Egg Bowl, getting ready for a potential CFP. And instead, they got stories coming out that Lane Kiffin's ex-wife and family are touring LSU and Florida's campus. I mean, like, what are we doing, right? I mean, just lie to me. Tell me you love me when you really don't. Be with me until the very end. Tell me you're devoted. And the day that you decide to not be devoted, walk out, cut bait, let's get divorced, and we'll just make a clean break, and we'll move on. But, yeah, I think all coaches are like that. And, frankly, I don't really believe a thing any of them say. Not one of them.
Help me craft a narrative. Washington beats Oregon Saturday. What's happening on the field?
Yeah. Takario Davis and Ephesians Prysock play like all Big Ten corners in this game on Saturday. Jonah Coleman comes out of the woodwork and loses the knee brace and is the guy that we thought we would see this year. And we really haven't seen that guy this year at all. I think it's been a little bit of a disappointment for number one, to be honest with you. And then Damon Williams does what he did against Louisville in the Sun Bowl, but he does it against Oregon. I mean, you go back and watch the tape of that game against Louisville, and I know that Louisville had a bunch of guys that were out on defense, you know, skipping the game. They had a backup quarterback, obviously, in that game as well. He looked phenomenal in that game, and he has not been that guy consistently for Washington. So if that guy that we saw against Louisville shows up against Oregon on Saturday and Jonah Coleman realizes, you know, what we thought he could be this year, then they got a shot. And the other part of it, too, is that UW has been a totally different team at home than they have been on the road. You know, Damon Williams has 6 interceptions on the year. Every single one of them have come away from Husky Stadium. Every single one. So, look, I'm not saying UW's going to win the game. I'm not guaranteeing anything. But I just think this game is certainly closer than it was a year ago at Autzen Stadium. I don't know if the gap has been closed enough for UW to actually be able to pull this off. But I would be fairly surprised if Oregon boat raced UW the way they did last year.
Softy, I appreciate you making time for us, man. Thank you. I'll see you in the press box.
All right, dude. Anytime. I'll see you Saturday.
And there he goes, Dave Softy Mahler from KJR in Seattle. We bring him on every year for Washington Oregon Week. Damon Williams Jr. got sacked a bazillion times last year when Oregon and Washington played. You know, I expect the Ducks to pin their ears back and come after him. Certainly questions about Jed Fish. And what an interesting dichotomy when you look at Dan Lanning at Oregon, who is saying, what, the grass isn't greener, I'm here, I'm staying. Granted, he's got a contract that's got a massive buyout in it. There's all this talk about potential stock options at Nike that he may have for staying as a retention bonus. There's certainly, the salary he's making and the advantages he has being in Eugene as the football coach at the University of Oregon. I think it's one of the best three or four jobs in the country. But you have Dan Lanning saying, this is where I want to be. And granted, his alma mater, William Jewell College, is not going to call his name. Meanwhile, you got Jed Fish, former UCLA assistant, guy who's got ties to Florida, who is looking over there longingly at the job at Florida, hoping probably Lane Kiffin doesn't take it and he and his family can pick up and move out of Seattle. It is just an interesting difference. I do think there's a danger here that the tide has turned for Washington in a way that isn't the healthiest of cycles, meaning Oregon is a top-tier Big Ten conference team. I think Washington's in that next group. Oregon in the next decade could make seven college football playoff appearances. Washington, I don't know. I need to see kind of where Washington lands and where they end up. The departure of Kalen DeBoer threw a wrinkle into everything in Seattle. Good stuff. Tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. Follow me on Instagram at John Canzano. Tell me who you like in the Oregon-Washington game. I'll have full coverage of the game in person from Seattle at johncanzano.com throughout the weekend. But should be a great week talking about this. Thanksgiving week, of course. I want you to have a great Thanksgiving with your family. But every year it's a treat to have Softy on the show. Good stuff from Dave Softy Mueller. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald face truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. Leave it locked in. We have so much more ahead right here on the BFT.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald face truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, Steven, you heard Softy. I kind of think he doesn't believe Washington can win this game.
He didn't sound confident, though.
No. Not his normal self, was he?
Because he kind of deflected to, like, well, I can't see Oregon continuing this run in the future, but for now, like, it's not, you know, it is what it is right now with Jed Fish, but in the future, but, like, I feel like he kept deflecting to what's going to happen later on down the road and not this season.
I asked him once upon a time when Oregon was getting into the playoffs last year and, you know, they were playing Penn State and then they were going to play Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. And, you know, would Washington fans root for Oregon?
Are you out of your mind? I mean, what kind of a ridiculous question is that? Honestly, like, how long have you been doing this for? 35, 40 years, whatever? I think I've been on your show probably 100 times in the last 25, 30 years, and that might be the dumbest thing you've ever asked me. And I love you. You know I love you. I love you like a brother. I love you to death. But, so, I mean, that's like, did you fall and hit your head? I mean, are you starting to get to a point where you need to have somebody kind of keep an eye on you, right, and kind of make sure all the motor skills are there? There's no way in hell I'm rooting for the Oregon Ducks in anything. John, I've told you, if Oregon played North Korea, I'd root for North Korea, okay? I mean, like, get out of here with that stuff. I mean, that's kind of a hope of Husky fans, honestly, that Oregon makes the championship game and then loses again. You know, you got Darren Thomas picking his nose, losing to Cam Newton in the BCS national title game. I don't know, maybe the Ducks get close and then Dylan Gabriel's picking his nose, and we have that gif from now until the end of time to throw out there on social media. But no, I'm not rooting for the Ducks. I'm not rooting for the Ducks in anything. Nothing. Zero.
He didn't quite sound that way, did he? A little bit more fire and spunk a year ago as Oregon was the number one seed in the CFP playoff.
Were you surprised at how almost like nonchalant he was about Jed Fish? And like, yeah, if he leaves, he leaves. Whatever. Like, he's not. And it seems like he doesn't like Jed Fish as the head coach. Do you think Washington fans feel that way, or is it just kind of Softy?
Well, I have a little bit of the backstory because, you know, look, Softy's, he's a fan. He's wearing Washington gear when he's in the press box. He hosts the 4-hour pregame show starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning on KJR. And he's told me, come by, be on my show. And I'm like, I'm not going standing in the parking lot with you talking about Husky football with a bunch of Husky fans around. I said, you know, I might stop by there, but I'm not going to sit there for hours with Softy. But he's going like, this is his thing. He grew up rooting for this team. And when Kalen DeBoer left, Softy, we saw him on social media. He got emotional. He got emotional when his coach was leaving. And I think he, like a lot of fans, went through the emotional swing of the Huskies not being very good in the Tyrone Willingham era to Chris Peterson to Kalen DeBoer to the national championship game where they played against Michigan. And remember, we brought him on the show prior to that national championship game. And listen to what how he sounded when Washington was preparing to kick off to play Michigan.
I just think for me, I think growing up in 1991 and watching that thing when you're 17, 18 years old, you kind of wondered if this was going to be a one-time shot, you know, for Washington. You know, this stuff doesn't really happen a lot around here. Obviously, you got a great program that consistently is vying for Pac-10 championships and Rose Bowls and things like that. But national titles is a little bit of a different animal. You know, they came close in 84 with the Orange Bowl team, came close in 2000 with Neuheisel's team that won the Rose Bowl against Purdue, won it in 91, but had to share it with Miami. And you wonder, is that 91 thing going to be kind of a one-off? And here we are, and you're 3 days away from maybe getting it back again for the second time in your life. So for me, John, you know, I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm a Mariner fan, but if these guys can pull this off on Monday night, this would be the greatest thing I've ever seen as a sports fan in my life, bar none.
Okay, a week later, Kalen DeBoer is gone. Softy is left in tears, and I think emotionally he has been through the ringer, and now what happens? Washington then subsequently hires Jed Fish. Softy and his on-air partner, Dick, show up to the Jed Fish introductory news conference. KJR is given a space that's kind of down the way from the news conference. And Softy is on air talking about, you know, in the run-up to the news conference, is talking about the fact that, look at Jed's resume. He's moved around. He tends to stay places 2 or 3 years. He leaves places. And Stephen, Troy Dannon, the athletic director at Washington, who, by the way, left shortly thereafter, is walking by the KJR broadcast booth, and here's Softy talking about Jed possibly leaving. Now, Softy's speaking like a fan, because he's been through it, and he's going, hey, these coaches, they just leave you. They love you, and they leave you. They do what's best for themselves. You heard how jaded he sounded in the interview. But Troy Dannon hears him and then tries to get the KJR broadcast booth thrown out of the venue for saying Jed might leave. Dannon himself is gone within weeks. He leaves for Nebraska. And so, Kate, you know, Softy was like, you know, they tried to throw us out of the news conference for basically saying, hey, prepare yourself. Jed could leave. And frankly, Jed's got, like, you could see the way he talks about the Florida job, the way he's looking over at Gainesville. If that job opens and they offer it to Jed Fish, he's gone. And so I think what Softy's doing, Stephen, is he's trying to prepare himself to go through it all again. And Washington, which forever got to dictate, hey, you leave when we fire you, has seen Chris Peterson leave, burned out, has now seen Kalen DeBoer leave for a better job at Alabama, and now they got Jed Fish, who's very transient. I mean, he has to know, like, you think he's mentally and psychologically preparing himself to get left again.
Well, that's the crazy part, is they've had two of the best coaches, like, in the era with Chris Peterson and Kalen DeBoer. Like, to hire those guys, just incredible job, you know, by the hiring process there at Washington. And then they've also had some really just huge misses with Tyrone Willingham and Jimmy Lake, as we talked about, as he talked about as well there. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense that he's kind of, you know, he has that grudge against Jed Fish a little bit. And Jed, you know, for what it is, he hasn't stayed in a lot of places. Go look at that coaching resume that he's had. It's a lot of leaving, going places. I do wonder, though, it's one of those things where if Jed Fish were to leave and go to a Florida or go somewhere, if he was offered that job, I don't know if a whole bunch of Washington fans are going to be crying about that one. I think that they almost feel like they could do better than Jed Fish. And as Softy said, like, Jed Fish came into a terrible situation and has done a really good job these last two seasons when there was literally nothing in the cupboard. Like, DeBoer picked that thing clean when he went to Alabama and everyone left, and Jed Fish was there, was just, you know, nothing. And he's turned it into at least something where, you know, going into this game against Oregon, they're less than a touchdown, you know, underdogs. Like, this should be a close game on Saturday, and Washington has a legitimate chance to win.
Look, over the years, Softy has, you know, said some things on this show I thought he was pretty reserved in this comment. This is Softy from 2019.
As far as the game on Saturday, am I scared? Am I fearful? First of all, I'm nervous for every freaking Husky game. That's number one. And number two, no, I'm not scared of Oregon. I mean, who the hell has Oregon beaten this year? They haven't beaten anybody.
There he is talking, you know.
He didn't sound like that today.
No. And here's Softy, by the way, over the years, I have so many Softy clips in here. Here he is talking about Oregon's uniforms.
The Oregon Ducks are sitting there at, what, 2-3? Is that right, overall?
Yep.
2-3, John?
2-3.
Okay. They're 2-3, and I'm still looking at flipping ESPN sending out Twitter alerts because of the uniforms that Oregon's going to wear for the game on Saturday. Who gives a damn? They're 2-3. They're a non-factor from a national perspective, and ESPN is sending out alerts telling us what the hell uniform combination Oregon's going to wear on Saturday? Why do I care? And why should anybody care about that? And what the hell is this webfoot nonsense? Are you kidding me? How ridiculous is that? You know what? Get a kicker, kick an extra point, and wear the same damn jersey for every home game like every other stinking college football team does.
All right. So you can't tell me that if Demon Williams Jr. and Washington have the Huskies in this game in the fourth quarter, that guy's not going to be walking around the press box pacing and nervous about what's going to happen. I kind of think, though, that here's how it goes for Oregon-Washington in the next decade. I think Oregon's going to own Washington. I think Oregon's going to win 8 of 10, 9 of 10 in the next decade. I think it's going to be a tough slog for Washington. And I think it's an oversimplification for Husky fans to say, hey, if that happens, something went wrong. I think it's more that this era has veered into Oregon's strength than anything. I think you can have really good coaches at Washington. I think it could line up very well for Washington in a lot of cases, but I don't think Washington is in front of Oregon. They're not in front of Michigan. They're not in front of Ohio State. They're in that next tier of teams, and I think that's where they're going to live in the next decade.
I agree with you. I think the only way that they don't have it this way is if they go out and Jed Fish, and he's not the head coach, and then they go out and they make a third generational hire, like they got Chris Peterson and Kalen DeBoer, then I think Washington can compete. If they don't do that, I don't know how Washington's competing with Oregon on a yearly basis. So, you know, maybe they can pull off an upset here and there. And, you know, like you said, it's 8 out of 10, though, because Dan Lanning and Oregon's got that thing rolling on cruise control. I don't think much is going to stop that freight train from, you know, continuing to improve and improve and improve going into the next season. I think for Washington, it's much more uphill battle. But if they did end up getting rid of Jed Fish somehow, and then, like, he takes another job, and they find that next Kalen DeBoer or Chris Peterson, that's really their only shot. But it's, I mean, they've done it before, so they could do it again, but it does not seem very likely.
But here's the thing. You say they can find a third generational hire. You're really talking about Jen Cohen, who hired Chris Peterson, and Jen Cohen, who hired Kalen DeBoer. And oh, by the way, Jen Cohen is now at USC, and I think she's waiting to wait out this Lincoln Riley thing. I saw her on Saturday at Autzen Stadium. She's waiting to wait. You know, She's dealing with a child in Lincoln Riley. Like, she had grown-ups for coaches for years. She had Chris Peterson. She had Kalen DeBoer. Those were grown-ups. Now she's got a child as her head football coach. She can't say it. I'll say it because I can see it plain as day. She's waiting for Lincoln Riley to kind of decide he wants to go to the NFL, to take the quick out. And if I'm Lincoln Riley, there was some evidence for him on Saturday at Autzen Stadium. I think he's dealing with the same reality at USC if he stays there that Washington fans, I think, are going to grasp here in the next couple years, that they're not on Oregon's level. They're not going to be able to compete with the Ducks as long as Dan Lanning and Oregon kind of keep this thing lined up and moving in the right direction. They have a better NIL collective in Division Street. They have Nike behind them. They've got Phil Knight's support, financial support. They're just lined up in this era to stay right on the shoulder of Ohio State and Michigan. I don't know if the Oregon can get over Ohio State and Michigan, but they can stay right on their shoulder. And I think in a decade, Oregon can dream about being in the playoff 8 times. And I think Washington could go a decade without ever making the playoff, or maybe one appearance in the playoff or two. I think it's going to be that kind of reality for Washington. I think Lincoln Riley got a dose of what it could be for him as well on Saturday, because this is a really good USC team by his standards. And I look at it and I go, they can't run the football. They're not physical. Dan Lanning was trolling USC. Did you see who he sent out as a captain? He sent Bear Alexander out there as a captain. It was a nice little scalpel, like, you know, throw some shade at USC move. And it wasn't talked about by a lot of people, but I looked down from the press box and I'm like, that's pretty good. He's got, you know, the USC transfer as a team captain here. And Oregon went out and dominated the line of scrimmage on defense and dominated the line of scrimmage on offense and ran the football effectively when they needed to run the football and outrushed USC so badly that it became a factor in the third and fourth quarter when it was just obvious that all USC could do is try to throw the football and try to stay close to Oregon. And I think if you're Lincoln Riley, you kind of come away from that game, and I would be surprised if on the plane trip home he wasn't thinking, if I stay in the Big Ten, I'm not going to be in front of Ohio State, I'm not going to be in front of Michigan, I'm not going to be in front of Oregon. Ohio State's in that next tier with Washington. So I think there's a reality there, and Jen Cohen's sitting over there at USC. She was the one who hired Chris Peterson and Kalen DeBoer. Pat Chun's now at Washington. You know, I don't know if Chun can make this hire. He hired Jake Dickert, you know? He hired Nick Rolovich. Like, Washington may not have the kind of hire available to it that it once had. And you know, granted, you're in the Big Ten. You got the money. The Washington fans and coaches are all going to say, hey, we made the right decision. But I just wonder if you look back 15 years from now and you go, gosh, it was a lot more fun to be a Washington fan when you knew you could compete for a conference championship. You could compete to get to a Rose Bowl. You had a shot to get to the playoff. I don't think Washington ever gets to the national championship game again. I just don't see it.
The other question would be, John, even if they do, let's just say miraculously they find that third generational hire, do they stay at Washington? Like, is it a Dan Lanning situation where he's going to stay at Oregon? I don't know, because Kalen DeBoer didn't, right? Like, he had everything that he needed at Washington to continue to compete and win and, you know, to be successful. Like, as Softy said, they probably wouldn't go, you know, 11, 12 wins every year. If he wins 9 games, 10 games, Washington fans are going to be happy. He left. He left after the one season they got to the national championship game. So even if they were to get that third generation to hire, who's to say he doesn't just bounce after two good seasons? Like, I think that's a possibility as well. Like,
you become a stepping stone.
Right. I think Washington may be that stepping stone program, even though they don't feel they are that way, where I think Oregon with Dan Lanning is a different cat. He's kind of realized, like, look, Oregon's the best that I can, you know, that I need, and all I need here at Oregon. He's not leaving. I don't know if anybody that goes to Washington thinks that way as well.
I think a lot of coaches would be successful at Oregon. I think you could take 50 coaches and you could plug them in at Oregon, and they would all, with the resources of Oregon, do really well. I think Lanning knows he's really lucky to be where he is. It is just one of those jobs that's lined up in this era very well. Jed Fish is at Washington, and Jed is well aware that the grass is greener somewhere else. And Kalen DeBoer said the grass is greener. I think you got a real problem at Washington. I think it's going to manifest itself over the next decade. I do think the Huskies are going to be in this game, but I can't pick them to win this game.
Is this one of their last chances, you think, for a minute then?
I think every year that gets beyond, you know, yesterday, is the window for Washington winning these games gets narrower and narrower. And I think the same goes, like, everybody who's looking at Oregon, I think Oregon's just going to get better and better and better, because the advantages that Oregon has, it compounds year to year to year to year. It's not just they've got an advantage right now. It's that, after, you know, it's like the SEC teams for a decade were getting more money than everybody else. What happened over 10, 11 years? The SEC started to run away with everything. Big Ten has closed that gap now. And so I think the Big Ten and the SEC are moving away from everybody. But within those conferences, one of the interesting thing that's happened is you got 16 teams in the SEC and you have 18 teams in the Big Ten. There is an obvious tiering that is happening within these conferences. Now, there's some questions, like in the second and third tier, where is Vanderbilt? You know, there's some questions in the second and third tier. Where's Illinois? Where's Minnesota? But there's no question who's in the top tier in those conferences. And it's not Washington, and it's not USC in the Big Ten. Leave it here. Punch It Audio next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Thanksgiving week. Have you been in the grocery store? Did you go to the grocery store on Sunday, Saturday? Are you waiting till Wednesday? You feeling a little daring? We also have We have the Apple Cup and the Civil War this week. No, we don't. We should, though. The Apple Cup and the Civil War should be being played this week. But instead, we're getting Oregon and Washington, and we're getting Washington State and Oregon State. I will have all the full coverage you need at johnconzano.com. And, of course, we've got great shows all week long. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have Dave Fry on the program. He is the broadcaster, son of Terry Fry, Oregon Ducks head football coach when Autzen Stadium opened. But he's a broadcaster who is broadcasting the National Dog Show on NBC on Thanksgiving Day. Dave Fry will be joining us tomorrow. Bruce Barnum, fired on the tarmac by his athletic director at Portland State. He will be on the show, and he will be unfiltered. My dad texted me something about Bruce Barnum that I think is interesting. He read the column that I wrote on Saturday night into Sunday morning, as Barnum was fired by Matt Billings, his athletic director. Billings took it upon himself to go to the tarmac at PDX and fire Barnum on the spot. Couldn't wait a second longer to get rid of his football coach, which I think says a lot about Billings. Again, I've tried to get Billings on the show. I would love for him to come on and defend himself, but unfortunately, he does not want to come on the show. That's all the only conclusion I can draw is that he is afraid to come on this show. He does not want to raise money. He is interested in staying in the shadows. But my dad texted me something about Barnum. You know, he said he didn't die. His horse died. It's an interesting thing if you think about it from a cowboy perspective. Like, you know, anything like Justin Wilcox at Cal. Wilcox didn't die. His horse died. Like, it, you know, it didn't. He's got to get off the horse. He's got to change horses here. And so it'll be interesting to see what Bruce Barnum does. Portland State will pay him for one more year. Will Barnum end up coaching somewhere else? Will he do something else? What does he have to say about his experience at Portland State? It'll be Bruce Barnum unfiltered tomorrow on the program at 4 o'clock. Why don't you hear for it? Let's do some Punch It audio. Come on.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, you probably didn't have this on your bingo card. Never in your lifetime did you think you would hear Portland Trailblazers coach pleading not guilty to charges that he profited from a rigged poker game involving several mafia figures and at least one other former NBA player. But that's where Chauncey Billups ended up today. Five-time All-Star, was arraigned in federal court in Brooklyn on money laundering, conspiracy, and wire fraud conspiracy charges. Each carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Here is Lauren Conlin with the news report.
I am outside of the federal courthouse in Brooklyn, the Eastern District of New York, where all 31 defendants in the Operation Royal Flush case, that's the mob rigged poker game with the NBA players, that was today. All 31 defendants showed up for a status conference hearing, and Chauncey Billups showed up for the status conference and also to be arraigned and post a $5 million bond with his attorney, Mark Mukasey. And he put up his Colorado house for this $5 million bond. I was shocked. I mean, you know, Damon Jones, I think his bond was like $200,000 or something like that. But yes, all 31 defendants showed up. They were sitting in two full rows of court. It was a beautiful courtroom. It was huge. With their attorneys, and essentially, you know, there was almost a roll call of sorts when they were filing their appearances.
Lauren Conlin reporting there. I love it. A beautiful courtroom. Meanwhile, ESPN's legal analyst Ryan Smith laying it down.
Yeah, it's interesting. His representatives have an interesting background. Chris Haywood is one of them. The other one is Mark McCaskey. Mark McCaskey, that name should stand out to some people because he represented President Donald Trump in some of the New York investigations he faced into his real estate companies and charities. He's also the son of a former U.S. attorney. That tells you that Chauncey Billups has big-time lawyers on his side because this is a big-time case. you're talking about the potential. If it went to trial and he was convicted and sentenced to maximum years, mm-hmm. you're talking double-digit years in prison. So when you have that kind of situation, you get these kinds of lawyers. And then in terms of defense, it's going to be very crucial for them to try to say, at least one idea of what they could say is, he didn't have knowledge of the scheme. He didn't know about this scheme. In a sense, he was present, but he didn't participate. Right. And if you back up and look at that another way, it could almost be, and again, I'm not saying this is their defense, but this is possibly what they could say, that Chauncey Billups came in to play cards.
Right.
Came in to be a part of the card game.
Yeah.
And he didn't know anything about this scheme or people running rigged machines and things like that. So if that's the case, that enables his lawyers to pull him out of the conspiracy charges, and that knowledge, that intent to defraud, that participation in the scheme is what the government would need to be able to convict.
I think it's an interesting leap. I have seen, you know, some of the text messages that the Department of Justice released, and it does appear in the text messages that Chauncey's in on it, which would lead to the conspiracy charges. Maybe the bigger aim or the bigger objective here, though, by law enforcement isn't to put Chauncey Billups in prison, but it rather is to go after the crime families in New York. I kind of wonder if Chauncey's ultimate play here is to become a participating witness that will help the law enforcement and agencies go after the crime families. We shall see. Meanwhile, Shedeur Sanders threw his first career touchdown pass, Browns Raiders.
And they go to Sexton out of the backfield. He's got two tight ends blocking on the outside. He's got room. He bursts inside Raiders territory. One man to beat. He won't be caught. Touchdown, Sampson. 66 yards.
66 yards. Shedeur Sanders was all right. He threw a touchdown pass. He threw an interception. He looked like an NFL quarterback. Meanwhile, after the game, he sounded a lot like Shedeur Sanders.
But it's no excuse. You got to go out there and perform. Like, there's no choice. There's no question. Nobody cares if this was 1 week of prep. Who cares? You know? So a lot of people wanted to see me fail, and it ain't going to happen. You know? It ain't going to happen.
It ain't going to happen, he says. Shedeur looked all right. He'll get another chance.
He's already been announced as the next week's starter, even if Dylan Gabriel passes concussion protocol.
He'll be there. That won't be the Raiders, though. Steven, how did he look?
I mean, he's fine. Like, the touchdown pass was a little swing pass. Like, it's not like he was reading the defense. He made a couple decent passes, but enough to warrant another start and see what you got in the guy, right? Like, I think that's what it is can he actually play? Well, they played the Raiders. We'll see next week when they play a better team.
They get the 49ers.
Yeah, the 49ers. So, yeah, I mean, warrant another start, though, for sure.
There he is. He's got a TD pass. I'm not rooting against him. Meanwhile, Paul Feinbaum asking a question. Does USC regret leaving the Pac-12?
I do. And because it just, what are they? I mean, who are they anymore? I mean, I watched that game yesterday, but because I do respect their tradition, and it was a really, by the way, it was the only really compelling matchup in that window, But around the country, I mean, you walk into a bar in Pittsburgh and Chicago, they're, oh, Southern Cal. You go back 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, Southern Cal was on the top shelf with Alabama and Notre Dame and Ohio State. They're not anymore.
Yeah, I think he's right, and I think Lincoln Riley knows it. Lincoln Riley was asked in the news conference if he saw the sign that read, "Extend Lincoln Riley." Duck fans holding up signs at game day and in the stadium.
That might be the dumbest question I've been asked as long as I've been a head coach, and I've been asked a lot of questions. You ought to feel a little embarrassed to ask that question. This is a professional thing. You ought to try it.
Lincoln Riley, it was a dumb question. Did you hear in the background, though? Hey, hey, Nana, goodbye.
It is a dumb question. Really
it
dumb,
is dumb
question.
It is dumb, but I think he could have handled it better, too. All right, we're coming up. We got the 5 at 5. We're going to lead you right into, what day is it? Monday. We have Monday Night Football. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. We got football all week long. The BFT radio shows will be here for you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, leading you into your holiday. Turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing. I'm a purist, so that's what I'm saying is being served for Thanksgiving. You serve what you want to serve. I'm not going to judge you. Leave it here.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I think we could do a whole hour on the Big Ten Conference and what is going on sort of with the hierarchy of that conference. Matt Barry talking about the Big Ten schools, looking over at the Pac-12 schools that came in, the four schools that came in, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington?
I don't think the Big Ten accepts them. I don't think anyone in the Big Ten.
No.
Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, any of these, Indiana now, any of these legitimate Big Ten blue bloods, they don't accept USC. They don't accept anyone that used to be in the Pac-12. They tolerate Oregon because Oregon's a kind of a thorn in their side. But none of these Big Ten people look at them as Big Ten schools. Yesterday, last night, was a Pac-12 after dark night. You had UCLA and Washington. You think anyone in the Big Ten gives a damn about UCLA and Washington?
They do not. They're not worried about them. They're not thinking about them.
What about Oregon, though?
They just tolerate them. As he said, they tolerate Oregon because Oregon's good. And they go, okay, we have to kind of deal with Oregon being there.
But they kind of play like a Big Ten team. Oregon
they
do. Does.
They're more physical. I mean, Mario Cristobal started it and Dan Lanning finished it, you know? Cristobal liked to talk about being physical. Oregon actually was physical, and it looked like a Big Ten team playing a Pac-12 team at Autzen Stadium, didn't it, back in the day?
It did, yeah. Like
the
just,
way they outrushed them?
Just, yeah, because USC's been running the football this year, John. They couldn't do anything offensively when they tried to run the football.
So Oregon has that physicality. USC doesn't. But I remember when the, you know, when the four teams went into the Big Ten, the fan bases that I was thinking about were like Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa, Purdue. Those were the fan bases. And I happened to be, it was right at the time. Remember when I was the minister at the wedding, made a big deal. I was asked to be the officiant at a wedding. It was a Midwestern couple that was getting married. They were from Wisconsin. And I went to the reception dinner, you know, the night before the wedding, and the fans that were there, the people were there were Minnesota fans, Iowa fans, and Wisconsin fans. And I said, hey, this is a really good sort of crowdsourcing thing. I said, tell me how you feel about this team's coming in. And they were not happy. They were like, you know, what are we playing for now? Fifth place? Like, because they saw USC and Oregon coming in. They weren't worried about Washington and UCLA. They were worried about USC and Oregon. And I think it's just Oregon that will end up kind of finishing above that group all the time. And I think that will get very old for those Big Ten fans. We could do an hour on it, but we'll do it another time. Tomorrow on the show, Bruce Barnum, Portland State football coach, unfiltered, among others. But, Stephen, let's do the 5 at 5.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
Well, John, Justin Wilcox got fired at Cal, and you are reporting that Oregon State and Justin Wilcox have been in contact for their head coaching vacancy. I think that'd be a really good fit. But we also are on Airplane Watch 2025, John. I made a little thing here. Will you play it?
Oregon State. Airplane Watch 2025.
Montana State head coach Brent Vegan was spotted at PDX last night at the arrivals coming over from Montana. He was asked about if this was in the Oregon State head coaching job. He did not answer the question, but Brent Vegan was seen in PDX. Justin Wilcox now talking to Oregon State. It seems like it's down to the final three. Vegan, Jamarcus Shepherd of Alabama, and I'm blanking on the North Dakota State head coach.
Tim Polasek,
there we go. But now with a little monkey wrench of Justin Wilcox thrown there as well.
Keep an eye on Wilcox. I think they'll run out that ground ball. They'll see what's there. I am told that intermediaries on behalf of Wilcox and Oregon State were in contact this morning. Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, I expect he will talk with Justin Wilcox. I don't know if he's so far down the road that he's got his mind made up or not. But I expect that, you know, Stephen, everyone keeps talking about after the Washington State-Oregon State game on Saturday, that there'll be a decision made. Keep an eye on Black Friday. I kind of think Oregon State may get in front of it and let, you know, their TV broadcast on Saturday sort of tell the story.
I actually would like that. Get a little PR going for it.
Get it going on Friday. Come on.
Number two.
Well, speaking of Oregon coaches, we're talking about Oregon State head coaching position. Former University of Oregon head coach Chip Kelly. He was the Las Vegas Raiders offensive coordinator. He has been fired today. Chip Kelly fired after the Raiders lost 24-10 to Shedeur Sanders and the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. dropped the Raiders at 2-9 on the season. Vegas has been very poor on the offensive side of the football, John. Tied for last in the NFL in points per game, 30th in yards per game, and 31st in rushing yards per game. The Raiders have scored fewer than 10 points in four games this season, which is most of the NFL. Now, of course, Chip Kelly joined the Raiders after helping Ohio State win a national championship as their O coordinator last season. Kelly was reported making an average annual salary of $6 million when he came over to the Las Vegas Raiders, but he lasts only 11 games in Vegas. They'll be looking for a new coordinator.
Yeah, look, Chip Kelly didn't work with the Raiders. So much of Chip Kelly's play calling, though, is about getting his superior athletes in position to succeed. He did it at Oregon. He did it at Ohio State. He has struggled everywhere else. And all I can draw from that is that, you know, first of all, there's some parity in the NFL that is by virtue of how the league is set up. But secondarily, the places he's been, UCLA and now with the Raiders, these last two stops, he doesn't have better players, right? He didn't have better players at UCLA. He doesn't have better players with the Raiders. He struggled. They're averaging a season, you know, worst, NFL worst, 15 points per game on offense. They're dead last in yards per game. Pete Carroll needing to make a change, but I'm not sure Chip Kelly is the change. I think he needs better players.
Number three.
Portland Trailblazers head coach. I guess he's not like the former head coach, but Blazer head coach Chauncey Billups. He pled officially not guilty today to charges that he profited from rigged poker games. He showed up in Brooklyn, federal court today in front of the judge, and he said not guilty. Then the judge then set a bail for Chauncey Billups at $5 million, which Chauncey used his house in Colorado as collateral. His wife and daughter both co-signed the bond. Interesting part about that is Chauncey's $5 million bail was much more than everybody else's. Damon Jones was reported around $200,000, but Chauncey at $5 million. Seemed a little weird, but Chauncey pleaded not guilty. They also are talking about maybe some people, you know, flipping on him and doing some stuff because everyone was there at the courtroom today. But Chauncey, $5 million, John, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I think they know he has it, and I think they know he's a possible flight risk.
Number four.
Well, I never thought I'd have to talk about Justin Tucker again, but here I am talking about Justin Tucker again as the Saints are bringing in former Ravens kicker Justin Tucker for a tryout. Kellen Moore confirmed that today. Kellen Moore actually said this, quote, obviously there's been stuff that's been unfortunate. He's gone through an experience, and I think it's about collecting what that experience was, end quote. Of course, Tucker was suspended for the first 10 games of the NFL season because of violations of the NFL's personal conduct policy and was made eligible for reinstatement on November 11th, and this is his first tryout since that suspended ended. The Ravens released Tucker back in May after he was investigated by the NFL for sexual misconduct. The Baltimore Banner reported 16 massage therapists at 8 different spas in the Baltimore area accused Tucker of sexual misconduct in incidents that are reported between 2012 and 2016. I can't believe that the Saints would actually bring this guy in for any type of tryout.
No,
I can't believe
terrible.
This is a horrible look. He was terrible as a kicker. If you're just going to go with edit skills, he was horrible as a kicker in his final season. This is sickening that the Saints are even bringing him in. I can't believe that they're doing this.
Can't believe they're doing this either. But, losing franchises are, a culture problem. They're losing franchises for a reason.
I also can't believe Kellen Moore said that he's been through some stuff that's unfortunate. Like, that is just
unfortunate for who?
Yeah, the victims.
Yeah right?
Unfortunate for who? What are we doing here? Jeez.
Awful.
Number five.
We do got Monday Night Football. 49ers hosting the Panthers here. That's why we're heading out a little early. But I wanted to talk about the Beavs, John. We got Feast Week for college basketball. And Oregon State was down at the U.S. Virgin Islands Paradise Jam. It was a tournament that had teams, the other seven teams, Evansville, Akron, Iona, Charleston, UMass, Yale, and Green Bay. Oregon State finished last in the tournament. They lost today to UMass.
Doesn't get any better.
They're now 3-4. This team is not very good, and it's shockingly. I thought they may be decent. They looked okay the first three games, lost to Oregon, looked good in the Oregon game, and now have finished last in this tournament. Next up is a game against Cal Baptist at home. But Oregon State basketball not doing any better than the football team.
Well, there you go. Scott Barnes, EAD at Oregon State. It underscores how much he needs to get this football hire right. Because, it looks like he whiffed on Trent Bray, obviously. The extension for Wayne Tinkle hasn't been good. You can't have another hire that goes wrong. And it's kind of why I think, no fault of Jamarcus Shepard, the Alabama assistant, who apparently knocked it out of the park with the search committee. You know, I think he's got a strike against him because of Trent Bray, and that Barnes needs this next hire to be viewed as a solid hire, right? He needs that for his legacy and for his own sanity. So you decide among the candidates, is that a Brett Vegan at Montana State? Is it a Tim Polsek at North Dakota State? Is it a Justin Wilcox? Because I think first-time coaches, not going to be his thing. We're back tomorrow with another great show. Stick around for Monday Night Football right here.